Live from Torquay, this is Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye on 94.7 The Pulse.
And it's been a very big morning here talking all of the issues of the Surf Coast down here live in Torquay for Mitchell's Front Page. Libby Coker is just vacating the Cafe Moby and we're changing the positions here, and James Taylor is joining us, one of our favourite correspondents down here for the Surf Coast Times. How are you, James?
Thank you, Mitchell, and it's very nice to be back.
Yes, good to see you once again. So many issues to discuss this morning, and we spoke to the councillor earlier today about a range of issues. Cycle tourism is one that seems to be coming up a fair bit.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that adventure tourism is becoming an increasingly interesting thing for this part of the world, because obviously it's a great part of the world and the Surf Coast has lots to see and do down here. And as I think Margot Smith said at the council meeting last month now, there's more to do down here than just come down and lie on the beach. You can get out in the parks, you can go riding, and there's lots of good riding to do down here, especially down in Forest, which is, I think, is just over the border in the Colac Otway Shire, but it's a real mountain biking hub. So I think this strategy that the council's endorsed is really trying to tap into that desire for people to go on more active holidays and to get out there and get amongst it.
And they're spending $300,000 to upgrade various bike tracks and various pieces of infrastructure.
Yeah, I think the idea is to pick out some really world class facilities or things that could be world class, and that includes a Surf Coast Walk down here, and really link it all together. Because I think if you put all of it together, you can pretty much ride from Barwon Heads right to the South Australian border if you put all of the trails together, and that's a massive draw card for anyone at any council that wants to set up tourism opportunities along the way and set up accommodation and cafes, and obviously cyclists love their coffee, so there's plenty of opportunities to get in there.
It's an interesting point, because in other countries they do have things like, for example, walks that you can do, and as you said, the infrastructure exists right along the way, so you can go to cafes and restaurants, and there's accommodation, so you know, obviously you're going to have a lot of collaboration if you want to work with people in South Australia to do the whole route, but it does seem like it's not outside the realms of possibility.
Yeah, it's all very possible, and hopefully for those people that aren't quite up to doing the whole thing in one hit, you have a decent bus route at the end so you can put your bikes on the end and get yourself back here.
Yeah, no, that's good. Also, the issue of food vans, although the council was keen to point out that it's not really food vans, it's more pop-up establishments.
Yeah, pop-up food venues is probably a more accurate way of describing it. That's just over the back here in Gilbert Street and just off Azealia Bay Road. I think the traders are mostly concerned about the fact that it seemed to be a fly-by-night operation. These people are coming in over the peak periods and they're taking advantage of the increased levels of tourists down here, and they're reaping all the benefits and then they're basically disappearing. But if they're hanging around for the whole time and they're essentially trading the whole time, then they're just another part of the business landscape.
And because these traders down here, they really rely on the peak periods, don't
that's
they?
Right.
They don't make a lot of money in the downtime. So that's when they really need to have all guns a-blazing. And I suppose they feel like they're there all year battling it out at the coalface, and these businesses come in for 1 or 2 days a year and make all the money.
That's very much the sentiment that's been coming through to us at the Surf Coast Times. But as I say, if they become a new and interesting part of the Torquay shopping and commercial retail landscape, then it's going to pull more people into the town, and that benefits everybody.
That was my point. Also, the councillor said that. So do you think that would be acceptable enough to the traders if he said, well, we're going to have more people coming in anyway? They'd say, it's probably fair enough.
I think so. I understand the council will be convening a meeting between these people and the pop-up venues and the various traders to sort of thrash out some misunderstandings with the whole planning scheme, because I think that's where a lot of the confusion arose from, that this happened and these things literally popped up, not quite overnight, but over the space of a couple of weeks, and everyone said, well, where's this coming from? And so there were questions about, well, this is being foisted on us, where was the planning, where were the applications? The council has tried hard to explain its position, but hasn't quite got there, so that's why they're having this meeting to sort of thrash out all of the details and hopefully get everyone on the same page.
I suppose the point is that most people out there in the community don't own a business, they don't own a cafe, they're just the humble consumer that wants to go in and get a good value bargain to eat something a bit different, a bit more diverse. So do you think that there's broad support for it?
Well, I think variety is the spice of life, and anything that increases variety and diversity, I suppose, increases competition too, and so that I suppose that'd generally be a good thing.
Now, we spoke about the Anglesey roundabout. Mm. Any developments on that?
No, not as far as I know. I mean, as we spoke about last time, I think VicRoads have a plan and they're running consultations on it, and so hopefully they'll get some money on it and they'll start construction, I think, towards the end of the year. There's been a bit of support in the community meetings I've been to for upgrading one of the routes through the bush as a sort of an Anglesey bypass. My understanding is that VicRoads is very down on that idea, as it'd be a major hazard in terms of a major bushfire. You can imagine the dangers you'd have if you had traffic going through the bush and then a bushfire broke out in the Anglesey Heath and having to deal with traffic getting out of there and cars being trapped on the road. So VicRoads is a little bit down on that idea, and it sees the roundabout and putting in a median intersection and putting in some upgrades as a better solution for an issue that really is only affecting the town over the peak summer periods at its absolute worst.
One thing that I thought was interesting is the whole Let Them Stay rally situation, because I noticed on the official Surf Coast Shire Twitter account, they do put up pictures of the rally, so it implies that the council is supporting what's going on. But I think some people might be a bit sceptical and saying, well, this is council interfering and commenting on federal issues. What do your readers think?
Well, the Surf Coast Shire is a refugee welcome zone, and you can see it on the sign as you drive into the Shire. But at the same time, there are fairly active refugee groups down here. I understand we had an article last week from the Surf Coast Rural Action for Refugees people having a rally at Bells Beach, and I think they had one recently at Aries Inlet too, and at the Great Ocean Road Arch just outside Fairhaven. So they're certainly active and they're certainly around, and so the council's certainly aware of it. But that sort of ties into a larger discussion about what the responsibility of council actually is. I know this is a subject that the council itself has been grappling with in recent times, the back and forth about, well, exactly how much responsibility do we take for the various issues that are out flying around there. I mean, strictly to the letter of the law, the council taking position on refugees is perhaps not exactly what it's there to do, but if the council's of a will to necessarily do something and make statements on behalf of its community, I think there's probably space for it to do that.
The reason why I think it's interesting is because I remember speaking to Rose Hodge, this was a couple of years ago, when we were just starting this program, and the council had recently done a vote on same-sex marriage.
Yes.
Again, was quite controversial because, again, the council couldn't do anything about it, even if they wanted to. So, you know, is it a waste of time at council meetings to be talking about federal issues?
Yeah, this is a subject that comes up itself in council meetings, whether the council debating the issue itself is a waste of time. I think, in terms of the same-sex marriage thing, it's an issue that's drawing increasing attention not only just in Torquay but right across Australia, and especially given that there might well be a plebiscite on it, probably not this year, maybe next year, we'll see what happens. It's something that councils have to be aware of, and I think the issue that arose with the council was a motion they were putting towards the Municipal Association of Victoria, as I understand, supporting same-sex marriage, and that's what sparked the debate about whether this is or is not core council business. But it's one of those ones that's yet to be resolved, I think.
One thing we haven't talked about so far today has been this issue of rabbit control.
Yes.
This is, I think, affecting sort of maybe not so much on the coast, but further back. Mm. Tell us about
that. Yeah, Thompson Creek and Freshwater Creek. This stems from, obviously, rabbits are a massive pest, and anyone that lives in Winchelsea knows that rabbits are notorious because that's where they all started in the first place. But my understanding is the council has copped a bit of flack from some of its ratepayers in Freshwater Creek and Thompson's Creek about its efforts to control rabbits in those areas because it has been opposed to using poison. This all sort of came to a head at last month's council meeting when the gallery was stacked full of people essentially hitting the council over the head with that point. Why isn't the council using poison? We're doing everything we can to stop the rabbits. Why aren't you doing these things, so on and so forth? And the council, I think, has had a couple of meetings with residents just before that council meeting and is well aware of the issue now. And I think they are developing a more comprehensive rabbit control and pest control strategy, so things are probably going to change in that space.
One thing that was interesting to me was I read in your letters to the editor in your most recent issue.
That'd be this one, yeah.
I think it was that one. Yeah. It was about rabbit control. It was like a letter and it was through the prism of a rabbit. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I do remember that one. I'm actually looking at it now. That's from Melva Stott. She's one of my regular contributors in Anglesey. I actually must go and read it again because I only glanced at it, but it's certainly there, and it certainly I think it reflects the interesting and diverse range of opinions that we get to our letters page. We get letters about almost everything, on local issues, on state issues, on federal issues, and as this is a federal election year at some point, well, we're still working that out.
We think July 2,
but it's hard to know. As Ricky Muir said over the weekend, there's never been a more exciting time to be a crossbench senator. We'll wait and see what happens, and no doubt we'll get letters from our readers, and also from probably from Sarah, and probably from Libby as well, and from the Greens, and from the Animal Justice Party, and anyone else that decides to throw their hats in the ring.
And another issue where we spoke to Andrew Katos, and he brought up this issue of the famous intersection that we've been talking about for so long with Beach Road.
Yes.
And he mentioned that obviously we have to get state funding to do that. He's put out a petition. Do you think the petition will have any impact?
Well, I think he's run two or three petitions before. I think there's a lot of ground, there's a lot of support on the ground for people that want the intersection fixed. Perhaps it can be used to leverage a bit of the money that will come out of that's been earmarked from the sale of the Port of Melbourne. Maybe that can be used as a bit of a pointer. Say, well, we have a petition, we have a whole bunch of signatures. Here's a problem that needs solving. It's reasonably cheap. I think it's only about $600,000. Let's get it fixed. Let's see what happens.
And talking north, there's a few developments out there with sporting facilities and such.
Yeah, I was driving out there just this morning. They're throwing up a brand new shopping centre out that way. That's moving along, and they're really hammering ahead with the new skate park they're putting in there. That'll be super impressive when that finishes. And it is a real hub for sports in the region. I think that the best way of illustrating that is the fact that the Saudi Arabia team was based down here and used it as its training venue for the Asia Cup, and that would not have happened had the Shire not decided to pump all that money in and build it up in the first place.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. Well, very interesting speaking with you, James. Thank you so much for coming in, and hopefully we'll speak to you again in a fortnight when we return to Talkie on Easter Tuesday.
Cheers. Thanks, Mitchell.
Thank you very much. James Taylor there, who is, of course, a reporter with the Surf Coast Times, one of their senior journalists, in fact. Well, it is 6 minutes to 11 o'clock. I think we were going to have a live music act to take us out, but that doesn't look like it's happening now, which is unfortunate, but that's what happens from time to time. But I just want to sort of maybe go back and look at some of the issues that we have spoken about with some of the various stakeholders today. The issue of water has popped up again well and truly. I think it's going to be one of those wait-and-see issues, first of all, to see if anyone notices any difference whatsoever with the desalination plant water and how good or bad it tastes. But I think the water bills, if they go up and they go through the roof, I think a lot of people will be jumping up and down about that. So we'll have to wait and see politically how that plays out, but I think that is going to be a massive, massive issue. The Cost Watch program is interesting. Again, you've got to actually see what they decide to do about the cost of living, but at least that they're listening to people, because cost of living is a big issue, I think, at play. And, of course, they're touring around the South Bowen electorate today. They're going to all places, including even into Grovedale and some of those areas where the electorate overlaps with Geelong. Now, Liz Carr, you've been with us all morning, but you've been inside for a lot of it. How are you?
Because it's a bit windy out here, Mitch.
It is, just a touch blowy. We're pretty sheltered in here in the VIP room of Cafe Moby.
Wonderful venue, isn't it? You can get to see what's going on and who's walking past and who's having coffee and who's not.
And how grey the water looks today.
I
and
know,
overcast.
And really wild. Yeah, I just spoke to someone from Polo Bay, and it's very wild down there too, so
along
the coast.
But there are still some keen surfers out and about as well.
Yeah, I couldn't believe when Richie said he'd been in the water this morning. I thought, you've really got to be dedicated, don't you, to go out in weather like this. And I'm sure our dedicated boss, Leah Rinkin, has his wetsuit on is out in the surf somewhere in Anglesey.
But one thing that he mentioned was part of what he's doing to raise funds for Beyond Blue. And I think he called it 100 Dawns. And what that involves is getting up before the sun comes up.
Yes.
And you go down to the beach, and what he does is he meditates for, he didn't actually mention how long, but a fair amount of time before the sun comes up, and then he channels what he gathers from that meditation process into his surfing, and then he's back here just as the sun's coming up. What great discipline that is to do that for 100 days.
It's amazing, isn't it? It is amazing. And he actually runs classes for meditation every Tuesday night from Spring Creek Community Centre. And that's in Price Street, Torquay, I think. And you can do that with a gold coin donation, which is really a nice way to learn meditation.
Have you tried meditation
No,
before?
But I'm going to try one of Richie's classes. I had a chat to him, and I'm going to give it
a
go.
He signed you up.
Pretty much. I think I'll come down once a week and give it a go. There's a lot of benefits from meditation.
Yeah, well, from what he says. He's also got a blog up about it, which we'll have to track down and put up a link on our website. But he's documenting each of the 100 days and what it means for him. So, again, for a lot of people, they don't get up before the sun comes up, do they?
Well, no.
You do
try
for
not to. Oh, yeah, I do. I do breakfast, so I have to.
But that's right.
It's getting dark. Is it getting darker or lighter in the mornings?
It's getting darker.
It'll be getting darker.
But then daylight savings finishes. Incident on daylight savings.
When does it finish?
Is well, it's the first week end of April, so I think it's about the 4th.
Okay.
But there was a bit of a hoax going around Facebook that said it was changing last weekend.
Well, that's what I did hear that. But...
And what people did was they actually did change their clocks, and they couldn't work out why their phone and computer clocks weren't automatically updating.
You've got to trust the iPhone these days, don't you? It doesn't call you.
That's it. But the good thing is, if you're not sure what time it is, you can actually type into Google, what time is it, and it will tell you.
That's amazing.
So that is good. That is good.
Smart thing, that Google.
And we also had Libby Coker here. I don't know if you have any strong feelings about negative gearing one way or the other. Are you a bit of a property mogul?
No, I'm not a property mogul at all. And I no.
Sarah Henderson says that the property prices down here are going to fall because of that. Do you think that that's what Libby Coker is saying is basically, well, they'll go down a bit, but then more people will have access to the market? So do you think the so-called investors have to suck it up?
Yeah, I think so. I think that that happens, you know, that's just poetry in motion, isn't it, really?
That's part of life.
It's part of life.
And that police petition, police, do you think crime's a big issue down here?
Well, I lived down here a couple of years ago, and yes, there were a lot of cars and houses being broken into. So, yeah, I think they're facing a little bit of crime action in the Surf Coast. But
are you pro the tough approach, boots on the ground?
Absolutely. Well, I don't think there's any other way.
Well said. Well, Liz, thanks so much for joining us and telling us about some of your takeaways from today's broadcast. We are coming up to the 11 o'clock news. Warming up next door, I presume I can't see him, but it'll be Greg McHenry, and he'll be presenting Roads to Recovery, always a fantastic program on 94.7 The Pulse. And, of course, Mitchell's Front Page will be back in the studios of Geelong next Monday from 9 o'clock. So we look forward to joining you then. But until then, it's been Mitchell's Front Page live at Cafe Moby in Torquay on 94.7 The Pulse.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.